Well, Annie, thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed. If we could start with some background information. First, could you say your full name?
Yes. Annie Wu, S-W, King, K-I-N-G.
Thank you very much. And Annie, are you lay or clergy?
I'm an elder.
Okay. In the Presbyterian Church USA, right?
Correct.
Good. And could you say a little bit about when and where you were born?
I was born in 1933 in Nanchang, Jiangxi Province, China.
Oh, my goodness. That is really interesting. And where did you go to school, graduate or divinity school, college, any of those?
Okay. I never completed high school because I was in the Shanghai American School that closed during the change in government. But I was accepted at the University of Pennsylvania, and I majored in what was called Oriental Studies. I took it as a BA, but that was actually a master's course. And then in University of Louisville in Kentucky, I got my master's in social work and went on to become a licensed clinical social worker.
Oh, fascinating. Thank you so much. And could you talk about what work or ministry you were doing at the time of reimagining? That was 1993.
Yeah, I had been invited by Marianne Lundy to apply for when she was the director of what was called Women's Ministry Unit. I was asked to apply for the associate director, so I was holding that job as associate director from 1989, and that meant coordinating staff in the synods around the country, and also managing the budget, which had to do with reimagining, as you can imagine.
Yes.
And then when Marianne Lundy left in July of 1993 to take a different position in the building, I became the interim. The whole organization was changing names and changing structure. So I was called the interim associate director, which was still the head of the women's ministries.
Okay, that is very helpful. You were also coordinator of staff and synods, is that correct?
That's correct. We had quite a number. When I began, we had 14, 15, 16 staff all around the country because we believed in getting the woman in the pew involved in women's ministries, and so we wanted staff close to them.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Great. And what work or ministry did you do after reimagining, Annie?
I continued. We did hire another associate director, but I continued as coordinator of staff and left there, and I left the building. I was, quote, downsized in 2002 when they had a shortfall, of course, in money, and lots of people were let go at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Annie, how and when did you first become aware of feminist theology?
Well, that's a funny question. I'm sorry, it's not funny. After I finished my University of Pennsylvania work, my former husband, Doug King, and I went to Indonesia to teach in the university. Mm. And while we were there, a good friend of mine, Polly Johnson, was sending me some books on feminist theology. I have to admit, I was so busy, I didn't read much of them. And at that time, my efforts were in teaching at the university. But then that's when I first became aware of it.
Oh, interesting. So how did your interest in it kind of grow then, eventually?
Well, when I came back to the States to work, and when I was working in Louisville, Kentucky, I was working with an assisted living place, which is a program for people with disabilities, not a live-in thing, but we worked with people who had disabilities and were trying to become more independent and live on their own. And so I was working there, but had no pension. I was past 50 years old. I was the salary in that at that time was about $16,000. And one day, Marianne Lundy called me and said, "Do you know that I have a position open for associate director?" And I thought, "Oh, well, what does that require?" So she said, "Oh, you have to coordinate the staff in the Senate, and you have to do the budget." And I said, "Budget? I don't know anything about budget. I never had any money." She said, "Oh, that's the easy part." So that's when I moved. I did apply and did get the position, and was working at the Presbyterian headquarters from 1998 on until 2002. And gradually, Marianne, of course, was very much involved in reimagining, and she would talk with me about it. But before that, our own Women's Ministries Committee, which was made up of people from around the country, it was like a board, and they, as well as some of the staff, we were talking about having a conference of women from around the country and maybe the world, but we didn't have any money for that sort of thing. And so when the interfaith group in Minneapolis started talking about reimagining, that was really exciting to us. And of course, Marianne was one of the prime movers of that.
So how did you know Marianne Lundy?
I had met her I met her earlier before I got the job in Justice for Women, you know, that was Women's Ministries, but in a Justice for Women social gathering. And I had talked with her and met her just on, you know, as a friend. So she knew about me. That's the way I got to know her.
Oh, nice. Okay. So you were involved in women's ministry at the time that reimagining was being planned. Do you have any memories about how that evolved, the planning involved in the idea?
I don't have any memories of, you know, the ins and outs of all that, but she, because Marianne would go to planning meetings in Minneapolis and so on, she'd come back and she would talk to me about what they were hoping to do. And what especially interested me was that they were planning to have theologian, women theologians from around the world. And to me, that just struck home, because I myself am, my father was Chinese, my mother was American from Philadelphia. She had gone to China as a nurse. And so, you know, just the international part of it was very exciting to me. The other thing was that Marianne and I had to discuss, did we have any money to contribute to the reimagining budget? And of course, that's the issue that became such a hot issue after reimagining. But Marianne was very knowledgeable about our budget. And of course, I had to be too. And so she said, "Well, such and such a fund, And I thought, oh yeah, that's good, because that was for education and so on. So that's where we got our, what is this, I think around $66,000.
Exactly. Yes, that's right. Annie, did you have a chance to attend the Reimagining Conference?
Oh yeah. In fact, of course, Mary Ann left the position in women's ministries, as I said, in July of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
So she and I were always in touch, though, because she was still in the building and she was doing another job. But we, at that time, the Presbyterian Church was sort of restructuring, and so we had to... and that was part of her job under Jim Brown in the top office. So we have to discuss about how we're going to deal with the staff and the synods. You know, how can we still serve the women in the pew, but, you know, change job positions and so on. So we talked a lot about that and reimagining. And my question to Mary Ann at that time, just to get her advice, was, I said, I believe this is the first time our staff can get to hear so many women from around the world, women theologians, and around the country, in fact. And I said, I would like to have all of our staff, all the associates and so on, go to the conference. And she said, of course. And so we did decide that I would ask all the staff to go. They could use their travel budget. They didn't have to pay for their travel there, because this would be an educational thing and helpful to the women in the church when they went back to their own homes. So that's how we started working on that. I did tell all the staff, all the exempt staff, that they could go.
Annie,
and
just
they all went.
They all went. And Annie, just to clarify, was this staff in the women's division that went?
Yeah, this, I'm talking about the staff in the women's unit as a women's program area.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I had nothing to do with the rest of the staff.
Sure. And Annie, what, I know it's been a long time, but what are your memories of the Reimagining Conference?
Oh, you don't want to get in. Well, I have many memories. I don't know how much you want, but the thing that I personally exhibit or felt, when I went into the first session, or went into the big room where we held the plenaries, I was overwhelmed. Partly because, you know, I had not experienced a lot of big conferences coming back from China after the culture, not after the Cultural Revolution, but coming from China to Hong Kong. I was a refugee in Hong Kong. And then from Hong Kong to the States, you know, I didn't have a lot of opportunity, like some women did, to go to this conference and that conference. And I was a little bit hesitant and apprehensive that I wouldn't know what to do or how to relate to all these women. And I was overwhelmed. And it was so different. When I walked into that first room, here there were tables that we were assigned to, and I didn't know anybody. I wasn't sitting with any of my friends. And I didn't even know what the stage was. Well, the stage was, of course, in the center of a circle. And so it was just a little bit overwhelming. And I wasn't sure. Are you there?
Oh, I am. Yes, listening.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure just whether I would be able to participate correctly, in other words. So that was something that came to me at the beginning. Yeah. And then when I heard the different speakers, that was something that was important. The stage, which was in the center of the circle, the speakers would move around, and there were different presenters, different song leaders, and no one seemed to be the big shot, you know, like there are in many conferences. Everybody had a role, and everybody in that room, in that plenary room, was equal. And that began to make a difference to me. I'm getting off a little bit, but part of what happened to me personally when I was rather apprehensive and things that I hadn't heard before from different theologians, and some things I thought, oh, that's crazy, I can't believe that. And then I started questioning myself. But the thing that helped me was, there are a couple of things, and very briefly, experiences. One was when I was went back to China to my family after the Cultural Revolution. My father died, and I went back for the Easter service, one of the first Easter services after the churches were reopened, and the church was packed, and I knew that the churches had been closed, so I asked the former pastor of mine, I said, you know, where did all these people come from? They don't know anything about Christianity. It's not like you had church members. And he said, no, we weren't preaching. We weren't allowed to preach. But we had Christians, and they learned, and then they were working in the factories and everywhere. And this pastor said to me, other people, non-Christians, saw these people, and during the Cultural Revolution, especially when people were afraid to do anything or say anything, these Christians would show concern about their colleagues, their co-workers, and they had a different way of relating to others, a caring, a loving way. And so people to wonder, well, what is this? What's different with these people called Christians? And they started, when the churches were open, they started to go with the Christians to the church to see what it was all about. And to me, that said, okay, Annie, you don't know, you know, in your rigid, traditional way of seeing God, you don't know how God works. God works in all sorts of ways. And so when I was at reimagining, I thought, oh, so some of these theologies that I wasn't comfortable with, I said, I can't write them off, nor can I write myself off. I can listen and learn and take what I can. And so that experience in China, and then the second experience was in Indonesia when we were serving there. We were there during the 1965 coup d'etat, and many thousands of people were killed, and then many people were accused of being communists. Actually, some were, some weren't. But they were put in prison, so there were thousands of people in prison. And then I heard that some of the churches, the little churches in the villages, felt sorry for the people in prison because nobody was really taking care of them. So they would walk miles and miles and take food and clothing to the prisoners at their own expense and at the possibility that they would be accused of being communist. And I thought, here again was a community where God was working, and I didn't understand it. So these other things made it very, helped me, you know, to feel more at ease with the different theologies, and especially when the women would talk about the conditions in their own countries and other, you know, in their villages, the poverty, the situations. That just rang a bell, and I felt so good about it. Sorry, I keep rattling on.
No, Annie, you have had an amazing life, and those were really important experiences that related to reimagining. Thank you for sharing that. I was wondering if you have memories about what particularly bothered you at the presentations, and well, let's start with that. Do you remember anything in particular?
Well, partly, you know, I'm not a theologian. That wasn't my field.
Sure.
I did take some theology courses at the University of Pennsylvania, but, you know, that really wasn't my strong point. But I just remember some of the statements, even like, I think it was Dolores Williams, and talking about we don't need someone hanging on a cross, bleeding sort of thing.
Right.
You know, I thought, well what does that mean? If I was believing that, you know, Christ was crucified and so on, and it was just uncomfortable, I should say.
Sure.
And some of the paintings, the drawings, were just things that I was not used to. But again, I gradually was able to, I was able to say, okay, I do not have to accept everything that I hear.
Yes.
And they weren't the same anyway. The people were not on the same page. Which, of course, made that a beautiful situation because we all learned different things. I also did not have to just throw out all that I had believed before, because when I was a teenager in China, this was after the government changed to the People's Republic, I had wanted to become a pastor. And I talked with my own pastor, my Chinese pastor there, and I said, I want to study theology. And of course, my Chinese really wasn't good enough to do it in China. And he suggested, you go to Trinity College or seminary in Singapore, I think it was, or Union in New York. I later found out he was a communist, but he was very knowledgeable of biblically, and he was a good pastor. But, you know, so there were things that I had really believed in strongly, and some of these were being challenged. And, you know, some of them I've let go.
Yeah.
And I can't really remember exactly just how to tell you about that, but...
So, Annie, what made you not become a minister? Why didn't...
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
A couple of things. One is that I didn't have any money. My father was a top tuberculosis doctor in China, but he was on a regular salary. So we were really, had very little money, and I couldn't get out. I was a Chinese citizen, and leaving was difficult, so I just never did. And then when I finally did come out, I was a refugee. I had no passport, and I had to wait until the U.S. government gave me a special passport, because I had friends who were trying to solicit their senators to let me come into the States just because my mother was an American citizen. And you see, Terry, at that time, when I was born in 1933, if mother was an American citizen and living, and the child was born in a different country, that child could not have dual citizenship. If a father was American, then I could have had dual citizenship.
Really?
And my brother was born 2 years later, and again, this is a woman thing, you know, women don't count.
Yeah.
When my brother was born 2 years later, he could have dual citizenship because the law had changed in the States. So,
wow.
The mother, father. So coming out was not easy. Coming out of China,
mm-hmm.
And then by the time I got my refugee visa and came to the States, things had changed and so on. So I just didn't get it. I didn't go forward with that.
Oh, Annie, that's amazing. Before we move on to the backlash, I did want to ask if you have anything. You mentioned you really appreciated the women from other countries talking about the situation of women there. Is there anything else you recall about the conference that you found inspiring or helpful?
Yeah, I think for maybe the first time, I really can't say, but I felt affirmed. I felt I am all right as a woman. Mm. I am all right as a disabled woman. I had polio when I was 8 months old.
Mm.
Because there were people there, men and women who were disabled, and that was affirmed. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a handicap. It wasn't a as for my sexual orientation, I was married. I had been married for 23 years, and then we were divorced, but we were still good friends, you know. So all of that was affirmed there at the conference. And for the first time, I felt safe and accepted as a woman and who I was, which sort of ties into the background, and maybe I shouldn't get into that, you know, the backlash afterwards.
Oh, yes, I did want to hear about that. Please tell me.
When I was at the conference, we went to the Presbyterian Church. Those of us who were Presbyterian went to the Presbyterian Church for something or other.
Mm.
And I had put my backpack with all my cash and everything under a coat hanging in, you know, in the lobby or someplace. It was stolen, so I had no cash, no credit cards, no identity, no tickets, nothing.
Oh, Annie.
But, of course, I had friends who helped me out. But when I got back to Louisville and started getting, I had to field some of the calls. You know, the calls were really not very personal against me, except that I was the top person in women's ministries, and women's ministries was attacked. And I was the person who told the staff to go to the conference, and I was the person who was the budget person who gave the money. So, but I knew that they were really after Mary Ann Lundy. So I felt so demeaned and so put down, and a loss of what I had gained at the conference. So I was just comparing this in a piece that I had given in July of 1994. You know, Presbyterian women had a gathering every year or every few years. And I was asked to do a forum on reimagining, so I had written a paper, and which I have to find. And some of what I've been telling you is reminded me, you know, of the things that I had written there. but I felt the loss of my money, the loss of my credit card, the loss of everything else was nothing compared to the attack that I felt upon women, and especially women in women's ministries, and part of it, part of personally. You know, I had lost the money, that didn't matter, but losing what I had been feeling at the conference and being demeaned because I believed and enjoyed and appreciated the conference was much a much greater loss.
Oh, Annie, before I forget, if you do find a copy of that, if you would be willing to send it to me, I would really appreciate it.
Sure. Okay, I can do that.
Yeah. It sounds very powerful. When you said that you demeaned, I mean, I don't know how much you want to go into detail, but what was sort of the tenor of the attacks against the women's division? How would you describe it?
Well, you know, and it wasn't only from the layman, and you know that you are familiar with the news, the organization, the layman, and of course they attacked us, and they especially later on attacked our young women, and so on, but.
You mean in the college group, the network of Presbyterian women, college women?
The Presbyterian college women.
Yes.
Not so much Presbyterian women, the older organization. We had, you know, different parts of the women in women's ministries. We had one program was Presbyterian women. That's the traditional women's group. We had women employed by the church. Those were the clergy women in the States and the secretaries and anybody else. We had women of color, and that program was, of course, for women of color especially. And then we had the advocacy program. So we had these four programs. And but then we also helped support a young woman in the UN office, and we also had a growing college women network of amazing young women, some of who have gone on to do great things. So, but of course, in the latter years when I was still there, they attacked the young women especially. And the Young Women's Network was put under, I can't remember how they said it, but so they were going to inspect or supervise and see what was going on with them. Of course, later on, that was thrown out. There was nothing there. And of course, for women's ministries, the staff there was... you know, what was so demeaning was that they discounted anything that we had heard or learned or felt at the conference. Of course, the distractors were never there themselves. They never experienced it. But I think they, many of them, they were not all men. But part of it is maybe a threat, you know, to the male dominance in the church all these years. So I think that's part of it. But the other part was there were women too, and it's scary when your own tradition or your own beliefs are challenged. And reimagining challenged some of those beliefs, just like I felt myself. And so it was like, and of course, the other issue, which was personal for me, was, Women's Ministry Unit gave $67,000 to this terrible conference. It was one of the biggest gifts. And, you know, what sort of undermining of the church were they doing by giving this money? And although that was not my decision alone, that was Marianne and I, you know, that also hurt because time and time again, even the people in our own building would say, oh, now we are losing our church members. Now we are losing our giving because the giving goes to such horrible conferences as Reimagining. So, you know, for all the things that were happening in the Presbyterian Church, it seemed to be all caused by women's ministers. We're so powerful, you know.
Oh, Annie. Annie, earlier you mentioned they were really going after Marianne Lundy. Why was that? Why were they going after her?
Well, partly she and Sally Hill were good friends, and they were probably the two of the strongest initiator of the conference. And whether they, and Marianne had always been very outspoken about things in the church, although she worked well, you know, in trying to help the Presbyterian Church and so on. But I don't know whether there were other reasons why, but because Marianne was one of the leaders, top leaders in the Reimagining Conference, and you know that, so they would go after her. I mean, I was really a nobody, but I was an accomplice. It wasn't that they were going after Annie Wu or anything like that. It was more just what the women's ministries had done, you know, participated. And of course, I was the one. When they made phone calls, I would have to take the phone calls too, you know, until we had a new director, associate director. And so the phone calls, I would have to listen to their, you know, how can you do this? How can you people believe this witch hunt and this sort of witch stuff? And, you know, it was just this degrading. And when they asked why did I send staff there, I said because for the first time we could all hear women from around the world. And when can you have that opportunity? And to me, that was the biggest thing that, you know, not that we all agreed with all the theologies, but we could learn and we could hear about women, how they suffered in some other countries and what the church should do and what Christians should do.
Annie, you obviously stayed. Did you ever feel as if your position was threatened, that you were in danger of being fired or losing your position?
Not for Reimagining.
Good.
No.
Good. Did your involvement in Reimagining change your perspective on feminist theology and or the church?
Oh, sure, yeah. And, you know, in some of the local things, like at the Louisville Seminary, we had a women's group. They have a women's center, but we had a women's group made of other people, more from the feminist perspective, and I was involved in that, just helping to plan it and so on. So,
Was that before or after Reimagining?
Oh, after.
Okay.
After.
Did your experience at Reimagining lead you to do that, or was it related to Reimagining?
I think my whole perspective of women in the church changed, and women as women, you know, what does it mean, created in the image of God? What does all that mean? And what does that mean as a person? I think I grew up in a traditional but not conservative church. When I was in China, because I was born there, then left because the Japanese were coming closer and closer to where we were my father and mother were working. Mm. And I fully also, when I was four in 1937, I was brought back to the States for surgery. And during the war, I was separated from my father for 7 years because he stayed to help the hospitals move inland. And then he came to the States and had a couple fellowships and was working in the States. Mm-hmm. So as soon as war was over in 46, mm-hmm. we went back to a devastated Shanghai. It was mm-hmm. pretty bad. But, you know, I think the church there was an ecumenical church that I attended. And at first it was in English. It was a community church in Shanghai. Mm. And I was very active as a leader there. Then it changed, of course, after the revolution in 1949. The church changed to a Chinese church and Chinese language. But it was a very... what should I say, traditional church. That's the way I grew up. And then when I was back in the States, that meant I had to find a church. At that time, at the University of Pennsylvania, I belonged to a Methodist church, which my grandfather helped build, Asbury Methodist Church in Philadelphia. My mother was from Philadelphia, as I said. And so, in fact, I helped the pastor there. But, again, it wasn't really conservative, but it was rather traditional. And so going to reimagining later on, and this was after being in Indonesia, of course, and all that, things just sort of clicked for me as to what these women, these feminist women theologians, were talking about. It resonated with some of my experiences in the Republic of China. I mean, People's Republic of China, in Hong Kong, in the refugee situation, and in Indonesia, living in Central Java, and during the coup d'etat. So all these things sort of resonated with me, which made me come to believe differently mm-hmm. about the church and what the church was about and what the church should be doing. And also what my place in the church would be. Some of that has changed.
Annie, this is fascinating. Could you just tell me briefly what resonated with you and how did it change your view of the church? Because this is really interesting.
Well, I think the whole concept of what the church should be about, more not just preaching, yeah. but the actions of the church, and how the church should be serving the poor, mm. how the church should be accepting those who were excluded before, you know, whether excluded because, I remember being, let's see what, when I was at the University of Pennsylvania, where was I? No, this was still in Shanghai. A young man that I knew, because I was the leader of the college people, a youth, and a young man came to my home. He was visiting me, and I said, "Robert, you haven't been coming recently." He said, "I can't." I said, "Why can't you?" He said, "I don't have good clothes." Mm. And that hurt.
Mm.
You know, the fact that he couldn't come, that he felt he couldn't come because he didn't have the right
Yes. Yeah.
These things that the women talked about, and the fact that people who are marginalized belong to the church.
Yeah.
You know, we were preached about this, but to actually see them doing things, you know, again, the actions, the living of the word, mm-hmm. is more powerful. And that's what I saw in communist China after the Cultural Revolution. That's what I saw in Indonesia after the coup d'etat.
Mm.
That's what I heard from these women theologians.
Yeah. Oh, Annie, that's really powerful. I know that I just have a couple more questions. This has been wonderful. When you look back on it, Annie, what do you think is the greatest legacy of reimagining?
What? Legacy?
Oh, the great legacy, yes.
Well, hopefully, just what I've explained, what it meant to me, hopefully this is true for a lot of women. However, I must say, like with the Presbyterian Church, we have lost that.
Mm.
I stayed until 2002 when I was downsized. I knew I was going to be downsized because actually I was older. Mm. I could get a pension. I had a higher salary because I had been there longer and in various positions. But I saw the change starting. And then when I heard from my friends, you know, they eliminated the staff in the synod, they did this, they did that, and the people in charge were not speaking with the love and the compassion and concern for women. Oh, we've been through that. That's nothing. We don't need to worry about that.
Mm.
That just hurts. Mm. And so I have, quite honestly, disconnected from a lot of that. Mm. I do not know what's going on, except for a few things in the Presbyterian Church, USA.
Mm-hmm.
My friends that I knew have disconnected.
Mm.
And I think that the legacy is in the hearts of some of the people who continue. I did not go to any of the other, conferences afterwards, partly because I didn't have the money or the time, and traveling was more difficult for me because of my disability. So I never did go, but... you know, we're dispersed now.
Yes.
And maybe in some communities, maybe in Minneapolis, there are still groups of people who hold on to that. But hopefully in the hearts of many of the participants, it did make a difference, hopefully.
Yes. Annie, I just want to make sure I understand. Would you say you've disconnected from the church? Would it be largely because of a lack of attention to women and women's issues? Is that a fair statement, or is that not correct?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Mm-hmm. For me, anyway, there's the Presbyterian women, but they're a separate group now. They themselves are not under the church structure. I mean, they're related, but they're not. Not part of, you know, what we used to have as a unit. And there's no real women's ministries unit. Partly it's because of financial things, and partly it's part of the leadership in the last, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think women's issues have gone away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think there's, in our society, although women have different, better positions in many situations, we still have problems. And and the church, the theology of the church, and some of what I've heard, or what I heard before, is just not quite sitting well with me always.
Mm-hmm.
You know, social justice issues, these things are, we were working really hard on such things. I was helping, I was staffing the church and violence against women seminars, and preaching, how you preach about violence against women. You know, we know that. I don't hear that now.
Mm-hmm.
I may just be so far out that it doesn't, you know, it's not that I've lost my faith, mm-hmm. but it's, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The institution has really disappointed me.
Yes, yeah. So where do you think reimagining, and I mean that in the broadest sense, reimagining
yeah.
is happening? Do you think there's that kind of thing is happening? If it's not happening in the institutional church, do you think it's happening anywhere else or not?
I don't have any facts, but I suspect that it has, well, for instance, here in Southern California, we had what we called the Feminist Network, Feminist Agenda Network, and we were putting on, and this was a small group of leaders, I mean, leaders is mainly planners, for women in, excuse me, women in this area. We had programs every year or so about the conditions of women, trafficking, or other such things. And this, for instance, that group was inspired by feminist theology. And we had finally given up having programs just the last 2 years. We didn't have, but I was very active in helping support that and arrange that and so on. It turned out that most of the women who came, and they will probably be around 40, 50, maybe 60 at the best, it turned out that these women were coming together because they were coming together with their sisters, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
They needed that nourishment.
Yes.
And they were already knowledgeable about the programs. We had one on sexuality, we had one on trafficking, we had, I can't remember them all.
Sure.
But we needed to get together, and I think that's where you see probably the reimagining communities around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Probably if you look other places, there are other such groups.
Yes. Yeah, that's helpful. I have one last very specific question that you may or may not be able to answer. As you know, reimagining has reincorporated, and we're developing a website. And I'm wondering if you had ideas about what would be helpful to have on the website or who might be interested in it.
Is the website up?
No, it's not up. It'll be up probably. We're aiming for the end of the summer. We're working on developing it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Speaking for myself, in fact, when there was something mentioned about a website, so I went into my computer to look at the reimagining things, and just reading some of the something from the layman.
Yes.
Still, Presbyterian Church still have resources about reimagining. Also, some things about even in Wikipedia, who was there or what. You know, I just felt renewed again looking at that. So I think what would be helpful to somebody like me is to know about what's going on around the country.
Yes.
You know, what's happening and what does this mean to women? And I don't know, but whether people have any faith in the institutional churches. I know that some churches are very supportive and good. I'm not talking about the individual congregations.
Yes.
But the institution. You know, maybe there's things like that could be helpful.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really good. Great. Annie, is there anything else that you'd want to add that we haven't discussed?
I think I better just shut up.
Annie, this was wonderful. Really, really helpful and interesting. You've had an amazing life, and your reflections were really, really interesting.
Thank you. Okay.
Good. I'm going to turn off the recording now, so if you'll just give me 1 second to do that.